Hello, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, HT, a Third Culture Kid, where as a third culture kid, share my thoughts, experiences, and conversation. I think I should also share some of my background as well and why it might be interesting to listen to me. My podcast name is HT. I was born in Korea, grew up in Brazil most of my life, and then I came to the States to study in undergrad in California, and then I worked in consulting for a few years, and then now I'm in a big tech company. So that's me in a nutshell. So in this episode, it's going to be another solo episode, but I'm just going to share my rambling thoughts, some of my experiences, and these thoughts are the themes I'm going to talk about. My mind goes to several places. So I think I just like talking about those as well. Sometimes I think those are like, oh, it's kind of an insightful thought. Yes, maybe vain of me, but I do get amused by my own thoughts. So I'll share some of them. I'll talk about virtue, how virtue isn't priced in the market. I'll also share some thoughts about Elon Musk buying Twitter. I'll also share some thoughts about self-doubt. I mean, I experience self-doubt. And I have those thoughts as well. Am I good enough? And I'll share about something that kind of helps me. And then I'll talk about NBA basketball. And then I'll talk about something I read, this liver disease going around that's apparently affecting children, which is terrible. So yeah, those are the topics. So if any of those sounded interesting to you, stay tuned, stay here, and hear me ramble. Maybe you'll like it, maybe you won't. But regardless, I appreciate your time. All right, politeness. I just realized, I've gone into some social interactions lately now that the restrictions to curb COVID, a lot of them have been lifting. You can now gather in social settings, mask mandates in the country, right? I don't know. I think some states are combating this, so I don't quite know what the legal status of indoor mask mandate is across all states in the US, but so generally, like, indoor mask mandates are lifted. So I've been hanging out with people more. Personally, I don't feel like I've gotten that socially awkward, even though I've spent very little time talking about, like, meeting people in person while we were in lockdown and while COVID was raging. So that's good, I think. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I just feel more comfortable with myself, so I don't really like give a shit about judgment. I don't know. That can't be the case. Maybe. Anyway, maybe I can explore that another time. I probably need to give more thought as to why I don't feel like as socially awkward or socially anxious after having not met people in person for such a long time. But one of the thoughts I did have while I was meeting people was that politeness can really waste your own time sometimes. What I mean by this is, like, you may have a conversation with someone, and just for the sake of politeness, you will stay in that conversation, and that conversation will run excessively long, even though it serves, like, no benefit to you whatsoever. I mean, perhaps it serves a benefit to that person, but you have to also look out for yourself, and your time is very valuable. I mean, if you, like, an interesting way of looking at it is, if you just recap your life and you say to yourself, try to calculate how much of your life you spent talking to a person, indulging that person just because you wanted to be polite. If you did the calculation and you surmise you spent 5% of your life just, out of politeness, conforming to some social norms and sacrificing your emotions, your enjoyment for the sake of someone else, 5% to me is a little excessive. And politeness can be a contributor into you, like, staying in that conversation, a conversation that you might not want to be in, that gives you no joy. And sometimes you have to, like, do things that give you no joy, one, because either it serves some benefit to you. I mean, I guess I'm a big proponent of doing things that serve you, because you have to look out for yourself. And I feel like I need to do a better job of this sometimes too. So it's kind of a mantra try to stand by, especially during this time. I just feel like people, if people adopt that, and I think more people adopt that, and I don't know if I'm being cynical, but if people are getting more selfish, especially after COVID, when times are tough, so you know the incentives to look after yourself are far greater, then they may do things for themselves at your expense. So what's the best defense for that? They don't have a naturally higher incentive to be selfless versus being selfish, then they're not going to do things necessarily that benefit you. So your best defense, instead of turning to other people, the alternative to other people, the only other alternative to other people is you. So you need to look out for yourself. I guess it's like a self-reinforcing cycle. Like other people are getting more selfish, so you get more selfish to defend yourself. And when you get more selfish to defend yourself, other people that you interact with might get more selfish. I'm sure it's situation dependent. Certain situations require a more selfish response, but that's like a self-reinforcing feedback loop, which isn't great. But hardships, I think, tend to drive people more to looking out for themselves. I guess that's the case, which is unfortunate. I think looking out for yourself could be like looking out for your family because you love your family, but for strangers, perhaps you have less room to look out for strangers, which sucks. I like to think that I am, I don't think people should take advantage of other people, but if the choice is between you being kind to someone else at the expense of yourself, I think you really have to take a look. And that's, some people would say, oh, that's selfish. I mean, another way of seeing, of viewing selfishness is like, it's a form of self-love, right? Loving yourself. And if it's not hurting someone else, then why not? And I'm sure there are nuances in different situations that would dictate the right course of action that would probably lean towards being selfless. But I think the principle that I mentioned, like looking out for yourself as long as it's not at the expense of others, it's a very defensible one. I don't feel like me having to justify this is ridiculous as well. Anyway, so I was in social settings where I thought I was just trying to be polite, so I like stayed in the conversations for a little too long. And yeah, that's an example of how politeness can really waste your time. And politeness to others is impolite to yourself. It's like a disservice to yourself. So that's a thought of politeness I had. And the lesson to me was, you can be less polite. Be comfortable being less polite. Being less polite is not the same thing as being rude. Yeah, they're not the same thing. Like, being rude would be saying mean things, maybe. Like, actively showing disrespect to somebody else. But you excusing yourself from a conversation because you want to look out for yourself, you do it in a nice way. You know, I just need to step out for a bit, or I need to go work on something else. I'm sorry, but we'll catch up later, and then you go off to do something else. That's not you being rude. That's just you being maybe less polite and just more looking out for yourself. So something I think I maybe can do a better job of. Yeah, maybe some people will find offense to that. I don't know, but you know, every relationship is it's a two person, at least takes two to tango. So the way you present yourself and then the way another, and the way that a person receives that, those are two active behaviors, that play into the relationship. So the way I present myself, I communicate is one factor, but that's not all of it. The way the person receives it is another part of it too. And we're both responsible for that relationship that we'd have. We're both, not the doer, also the receiver. I think the receiver has responsibilities too. All right. Another thought I had was how virtue these days, well, I mean, not these days, for a long time, it's not priced in the market. What I mean by this is firefighters who display courage on a much more frequent, maybe intense basis than, let's say, a software engineer. They don't get paid higher than a software engineer. Their courage isn't rewarded in the market. And virtue is just not valued in the market. So I think because it's not as valued in the market, we don't price it and we don't reward virtue financially. I feel like we've internalized somehow also that that virtue isn't valuable by itself. And I just compared to some of the books that I've bought, like Nicomachean Ethics by Aristotle. If you read some of the writings of the Iliad, the Greek writings from way back when, I'm thinking of a word that starts with an ES, that's like praises, that they like put values like courage, honesty, kindness, all on like a pedestal. That was what was valued by the people, it seems. Like those are the values that people strove for, like displays of courage, displays of honesty, displays of generosity. I mean, to an extent, because I think even during times of, I think greed was kind of rampant, even though back in the day, people were touting generosity. I mean, one example I can think of is I don't know if generosity was touted, but anyway, like back in the day, like courage was somewhat more touted. I thought there are books on this. Like these are what people in power would speak about and strive for and look for in people. But now with a market, you have another mechanism of like appreciating people. By the salaries they earn, or by the amount of money you're willing to give for a certain service, these services and these products that you're buying and you're valuing and you're implicitly showing the value of, many of these products their courage isn't priced, their honesty isn't. Honesty is somewhat priced, but honesty, like to an extent, like honest business practices, let's say, and then cruelty free maybe is another kind of priced in feature of the products and services you buy, but it's not like courage of like sacrificing your life in a war, which I guess was something that happened more so back in the day. I'm thinking about like the Greeks and the Romans. That's what I'm thinking of. But we can also say that we're more civilized now. I mean, it was pretty barbaric times way back when compared to now. So there's like this inverse relationship of how prominently courage is valued, and virtues, I think, are valued compared to how civilized we are. The more civilized we are, there's some correlation, I can't say causation, but the more civilization, the more civilized we quote unquote are, the less barbaric we are, we value virtue. I think that's it. And I kind of feel that I've personally experienced this too. Because in school, how you were viewed by the teachers and how much, what kind of praise you received by the teachers wasn't how, yes, to an extent for me, how what kind of grades you got, but never about like how much money you earned, right? That's maybe obvious. Like you don't want to judge a student by how much money they earn. Of course, it's probably obvious because we're not earning income. But regardless, that absence of being valued against that means that we don't, in our calculus of judging our own values, and we're so impressionable as kids, and so we look to our teachers as well to help us appreciate ourselves. That absence of a financial tag, or money as an instrument of value means That's just not how we appreciate ourselves. That's not how we start to like judge and perceive ourselves in terms of value. Maybe it was a different time, you know, with social media. You know, I bet people are like children are like showing off about like cars that they own or things like that. But for me, like I would look to teachers to help appreciate myself and to understand how to what kind of values I should be building and how to be a good human being, essentially. And the teachers, they would preach courage for one, working hard, being honest, being selfless. So the market for valuing human character, it was kind of like set by teachers. So I looked to that, they set that market, and then if I did the very things that they valued or they were preaching, then I would get praise from a teacher. And they associated those values that they touted as being a good student, which I was at the time, which was a strong part of my identity, and therefore increased my sense of value as a person. So that was a market kind of for like valuing oneself. Now you come out of high school, you come out of college, and the market for appreciating yourself and how you value yourself, who are the judges of your character and like your worth, quote unquote, as human beings, for example? Now it's not teachers. It's not going to be your grades. It's not going to be your teachers. It's going to be companies. When you're looking for employment, they are assessing if you're worth it or not to join them. What are companies looking at? They're looking at like your resume. They're looking at your experience. So a career is kind of a feature of how you're judged. And then if you're in the dating world, for me, as a guy, a straight guy, many girls maybe may look at my salary. They'll look at how much money I'm making. So financial production is kind of how I'm valued. But not, so that's in the dating world. What else? My ability to buy things for myself, because I didn't have to think about buying things for myself as much when I'm a child. But my ability to supply for myself, to provide for myself, is through money. So financial production is, again, it becomes a form of sustaining myself and improving myself. So that's a very prominent feature of my sense of value towards myself. Because for me, my sense of value is very closely tied to how well I can provide for myself as well. And it should be, I guess. And this is the world we live in, and that's the market telling us these are these very things that you value and that are close to your identity. Here are the features that you must display to attain them. And some of them, financial production, what goes into financial production, being smart, being cutthroat maybe, some to an extent collaboration, working well with others, having social skills. But these aren't like, these virtues aren't honesty to an extent, but it's not like, I don't know, it's not like extreme honesty. I think honesty, actually, you know what? Honesty, I think, is valued in the market. Like, for example, like maybe a rudimentary example is if you're in social media and you're being very honest and being very, quote unquote, vulnerable, people will appreciate that. And then you'll get lots of followers, potentially. And then with the followers and you, because of that following you have, you might be able to get sponsorships. And then therefore that can translate into financial production. And then that's a signal that the market values honesty. Okay, so honesty, maybe so. But in some of the features that I've listed, like courage isn't as prominent of a driver for you to be able to display possess these features at a high level. Like you don't have to be courageous to be like super financially productive. You have to be smart. You have to be socially skilled, but not courageous, not selfless. What else? Yeah, I think courage is a big one. So yeah, virtue isn't priced in the market. I think the effects of how a market prices things and your effects on how you value yourself. To me, I experienced that going from like school where teachers were really the preachers of what is valuable to be a good student, which is a big part of my identity and therefore my sense of value. And going from high school and then college and then now to the real world, quote, to call it the real world, but I mean, school is part of the real world, but going out into the professional corporate world by yourself, where other forces, the market, employment market, economics, companies, strangers in social media, or strangers that you meet, your coworkers, these people, your managers, these people are the ones, and these forces are the ones now that are now determining your value. And the market is a quick way to assess, quote unquote, your value. So that just, I think that transition really proved the point to me that virtue really isn't priced in the market. And that's unfortunate, I think. Or maybe that's okay, because we, the people, pay for what we think is valuable in the market, and corporations pay for what we think is valuable. And corporation really is a collection of individuals. Yes, sure, the management is like, well, yeah, the management might be a select group of people, and these people might be the ones making the decisions for the corporations, but they're people nonetheless. And we pay more for what we find to be more valuable. So we, as a group, are comfortable dictating and saying, hey, we want to value financial, we want to value collaboration skills, intelligence, hard industriousness, but not necessarily courage. And we show that, and we stand behind that decision by paying for the very things we find value in. And we don't pay our firefighters as much as we do, like software engineers. This includes corporations. This includes people. Yeah. So maybe it's okay, because it's playing out as we, as our own instrument of what we think is valuable through how we spend our money. Anyway, so that's a long-winded thought about how virtue, I don't think, is priced in the market. All right. Elon Musk has recently bought Twitter, or they agreed to a deal. I don't know if he actually bought Twitter, or the agreement was executed, but there seems to be an agreement that Elon Musk has bought Twitter. Was it like $44 billion or $45 billion? Now, so many people are so frustrated about this, but I think it's misguided in the end. This happens all the time. It's just the sequences, maybe not. It's like the other way around. For example, you'll have somebody with a lot of capital, and then they'll start a company. Well, because they use their capital to start the company, it is their company now. Sure, they didn't have, and they had the idea maybe, but how do I put this? Yeah, well, let's just do that. Yeah, the owner of the company that put in capital, they're now the owner of the company. They had a lot of capital, and therefore they were able to start the company and own the company. That's one example of somebody having a lot of capital, and that ownership that they had led to them owning the company. It happens all the time, even small business owners. Now, maybe what people are arguing about is the scale. Twitter's a huge-ass company, and he had that much wealth to buy a that big of a company. That scale, the fact that he uses money at that scale to buy a single company is what's abominable, because he could have used that money for something else, maybe something a little bit more generous in giving out to people, which is also debatable. Twitter is a huge platform and affects so many people. So him changing Twitter for the better arguably could be very helpful for millions and millions of people. So that's even debatable. You can't conclusively conclude that him sharing his money to people in the world so that they could just spend it as much as they want, it would be more helpful to people. That's debatable. I mean, if that's the case, why give your money to the government? Why not just spend it yourself? Why give the government money so that they can fund schools, fund roads, do other public services? Just do it yourself. And people can go like, oh yeah, Twitter's not like a public service. Yeah, well, millions of people use it. So kind of like, if you really look at it, it is a public service that people use. What was I talking about? So like how, oh yeah, it's misguided then. Oh, okay, so I mean, this happens all the time. Like a person with a lot of capital, person or a corporation or an entity having so much capital, and they eventually buy it. Like venture capital firms, that's what they do. They'll invest in a company. They may like own the majority of it, and then they will help run it, and maybe they'll sell it afterwards after they own the company and they make some decisions that really increase the value of the business. But they do, like, they make a purchase, venture capital firm. And, you know, we're saying that's okay because it's like a firm and a collection of many people. So that will, maybe you can say that, but that's still, they were able to attain that company, and maybe if they own enough shares, possess control of the company because they have so much capital. That's what Elon Musk did. And that's like that trait is, I think, the starting point of what people are really frustrated about. The fact that he had so much capital that he's able to acquire Twitter. Venture capital firms can do this as well. What else? And I don't know if people are aware of this, but he also technically, quote unquote, partially bought Tesla. So he invested in Tesla after it was founded. Eberhard and somebody else. Like, he was not the founder of Tesla, but he invested in it, became one of its largest shareholder, and then afterwards CEO or chairman, forget which one, I don't know what the right term is, but, and then he then helped the company launch Tesla and was an integral part of developing what we see as Tesla today, and we are better for it. And arguably the whole world is better for it because this helps us environmentally by reducing carbon emissions significantly because this is an electric car. So he did this before in a way with Tesla. Did we argue, complain then? I don't think as strongly as this. And also, we can also argue that the fact that there are people dissatisfied with this is good for free speech. We have to voice on these things. But also, I guess it's also valid for me to then contest people being so dissatisfied and disgruntled by this. What else? Jeff Bezos, I don't know if it's now, but he had ownership of Amazon at some point. Are we gonna crucify him? Who else? Apple, some individuals probably had ownership of Apple as well. Whether it was Steve Jobs, maybe Steve Jobs or someone else. Are we going to crucify that person? If a company owned a majority of Apple too, or if it was a venture capital firm or some investors, are we going to crucify them for having the capital to buy ownership of that company? No, I don't. I don't see as much discontentment about that. So, yeah, I think it's misguided to critique and protest Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter. Yeah, some cause for protest might be valid, like if it was monopolistic, but he has no social media portfolio, so it's not like monopolistic. Yeah. I mean, we've seen what he did with Tesla. We've seen what he's doing with SpaceX. And then he also has another company called Neuralink, which could cure many diseases and ailments that have not been cured by modern medicine at the moment in modern technology, like, for example, paralysis. We've seen what he's doing. Shouldn't we be excited about what he can do for Twitter, seeing what he's done for other companies? Let's look at just looking at his resume would be sufficient. But then, yeah, looking at his resume would be enough for you to, or for a person, I think, to find confidence that he might really make Twitter better than it is now. But instead, people get really caught up on, oh, he's like so rich, and he spent it on buying Twitter and not something else. That's not just him. That's like a decision that is allowed by like capitalism and free market free quote unquote market. I know it's not entirely free. I know we have some regulations, but it's a somewhat regulated market. It's a decision that several parties and corporations make. It's like it's accepted as practice, and we people will jump online and crucify him for that, and ignore his resume of the different companies that has been really changing what our future may look as humanity. And that's not an understatement. He is changing what our future may look as a population, what our future as a humanity may look. Space travel, really combating climate change, healing ailments and illnesses that modern technology may not solve. I'm sure there are ethical questions with Neuralink as well. But that is one very, it's like one of the primary benefits that Neuralink is striving for, to heal like ailments that are not solved by modern technology in medicine. So, yep, I think people are frustrated, but in a misguided manner. All right. What other thoughts? How much time did I spend? 30 minutes. Wow, so much rambling. Self-doubt. So, I mean, I think many people have like thoughts of self-doubt. And it's almost logical to have some self-doubt. What I mean by this is, if let's say you assume that you want to be better and the best you can do is by being the best, there's only one entity or party or person that's always going to be the best. That means like 99.999% of the people will always be worst than the best. That's just like the nature of what best means. So if I assume that everybody wants to be better, then everybody, except for maybe one person or entity, can do better and is worse than what they think they are, they can be better at. I don't know if I articulated that right. But point, I think the takeaway is like everybody except one person who's at the top or the entity has reason to doubt themselves and to want to be better and has room for improvement. Because there's room for improvement, there's uncertainty, and therefore you might doubt, like, well, whether I can achieve this or not. So they have a situation that can create self-doubt, because by definition, everybody except one person or an entity will not be the best. I think one thing that helps me is understanding that it's okay to have self-doubt. It's just a natural emotional state of affairs that may emerge from reality that is immutable. And this reality being one party and one entity is going to be the best. So almost always, and then like a very bolding, like underline always there, you're going to be worse than someone else. Or in whatever thing you're trying to be better at. So accepting that self-doubt is just a natural phenomenon, I think, helps. And then practicing recently, I think practicing kindness helped. Saying to myself, and what this means is like, to me, it means like saying to myself, like positive things about myself, that my sense of worth is not judged not judged by like the few things that I think I lack in, and then I remind myself, you know, these are the measures that that I do well in, that also should be happy about and proud of. And ultimately, in saying that, I realized that that's a kind of like a conditional sort of self-assurance and self-worth, because I have these traits, or I've displayed these behaviors, therefore I should feel good about myself. So I'm conditioning my sense of self-worth or on some of these behaviors. So that's a condition. And that may not be great, but the alternative then is like, I think my mind will go to things where I lack. So that's a condition as well. And then if my response is like, oh, I don't want to turn to other things that are good, other conditions that are favorable to me, so I neglect those, then I kind of let my gut, my negative self-talk, I guess that's what it is, my negative self-talk run unaddressed. It's like a one-sided acknowledgement where I'll acknowledge the negative self-talks, negative conditions, these conditions I lack in, but I won't acknowledge the positive. So it's like an unbalanced perception that does not play in my favor. That does not help my psyche. Another way of addressing it is, I guess, is like just acknowledging the self-talk as like thoughts. These are thoughts. These aren't me. It's like a very strong theme in meditation, I think. Being able to create distance with those negative self-talk and those thoughts, and having a different relationship with those thoughts. Specifically, just recognizing those negative self-thoughts, like self-doubt as thoughts, and then not like reacting strongly to them, just recognizing them as thoughts, labeling them. Maybe welcoming them in a way too. And then here maybe kindness plays a role where you can say, oh, you know, it's okay to have these thoughts. It's just normal. You're doing okay. So yeah, part of the kindness is there too, but part of the kindness is also, to me, because this unbalanced perception kind of happens naturally if you have some negative self-talk, but having some positive self-talk too, even though you are acknowledging that these favorable conditions, these positive conditions that are going for you, is a conditional form of self-love, maybe, and self-kindness and self-assurance. Just not ignoring that, it just helps my psyche. I acknowledge that it's conditional, maybe like looking into these are behavioral or historical things that have happened that have gone in my favor and that have made me feel better. But it balances out this negative self-talk of like things I may be lacking in that I'm in, that this negative self-talk reminds me of, and it balances that out. So I think there's value in that, and I sense and I feel it. So that's one way for me of practicing kindness, of reminding myself of the positive things that I have. And then another way is to look at the negative self-talk that you have and not reacting so strongly to them, and then acknowledging them as thoughts, and being kind, being okay with those thoughts. Telling yourself, you know, you don't need to be so harsh to yourself. And to me, that's what kindness is about, really like voicing it to yourself and saying that to yourself, saying those words. But acknowledging like negative self-talk as thoughts is just, I think it just feels like a very neutral thing. Like, it's like a neutral act. I'm like trying to neutralize that negative self-talk, saying, oh, those are thoughts, you know, those are okay to have. Those are my thoughts, and labeling them so that I create some distance between my identity and those thoughts. It's like neutralizing it. But it's like I'm responding to something negative with something neutral. But that doesn't seem to really like balance that out. So having some positive self-talk, reminding yourself of the positive things, and balancing that with the negative self-talk, creates a more balanced result emotionally. Like negative plus zero is still negative. Negative plus positive then becomes neutral. And so like mathematically, that just seems like that's the better way to go to help you feel better emotionally and psychologically. You know, I don't know if that makes, I'm not an expert in this, but it does help me, I think, to do that like positive self-talk too. So I'm going to go with it. These are my rambling thoughts. This is not advice, but these are some of my rambling thoughts. So if it helps you, great. If it doesn't, then not great. So yeah, feel free to use this however you want at your discretion. Anyway, so that's about self-doubt. NBA basketball, the Nets were swept. Kevin Durant from the Nets did not win a single game in the first round of the playoffs with his team. And the contrast between his prior team and this team is stark, where he has won a championship every single year with a team with the Golden State Warriors. I think when he was winning with the Golden State Warriors, there was talk of like him being the best basketball player in the world. And I mean, I dismissed those because he was playing with Steph Curry, the best shooter of all time. Also, arguably one of the top five players, NBA players at the time. I mean, arguably is a very, I just might not need that word at all. Probably recognize that top five best players in the league. Klay Thompson, maybe the second best shooter of all time as well. Draymond Green, an awesome defender. Great compliment to both Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. This was a team that had the best record the year prior to when Kevin Durant joined. And then he joined that team, won a few championships, and the people were calling him like the best player. The best player in the league. When that's like implicitly acknowledging that his individual skill was so great that it led him to win championships, which isn't true at all because you got to look at that supporting cast, quote unquote supporting cast. Steph Curry probably can't call him like part of the supporting cast, but regardless, it's part of the cast. But there was some sort of like misattribution, I think, going on by attributing the victory of the Golden State Warriors to Kevin Durant instead of really also the cast that, played a crucial role in delivering the championship. Anyway, so he was there, called the best player. Now he went to the net. I think he went to the second round at some point last year. Couldn't get it through. But this year, couldn't even get past the first round of the playoffs. So to me, just such a fall from the perceived status for Kevin Durant. To me now, I think it's maybe somewhat calibrated to the truth of how great of a player Kevin Durant is, which is he's not that great. He's great, but he's not like, I think Giannis is a much better player. I really do. And yeah, that's kind of what the Nets first round loss kind of validated for me. Kevin Durant it shouldn't not be in the conversation for the best player in the NBA. Maybe last year, I maybe thought this because I thought he almost single-handedly defeated the Bucks. Or maybe Jason Tatum just got really good at defending. And maybe Kevin Durant is still really up there. But yeah, the fact that he was swept in the first round of the playoffs and he did not play well in the last two games, his shooting percentage was, especially by his standards, was like less than 50%, I think, the last two games. Maybe I should have explained what the playoffs is. Basically, the playoffs is where the 16 best quote unquote teams in the NBA will play, and they now play with the stakes of being eliminated from contending into the championship. A team has to win four games to advance. If they lose four games, then they get eliminated. The team that wins four games advances to the next round. And then competes is one step closer to attaining that championship. And only one team wins a championship. But yeah, very disappointing, just baffled, especially with the perceived status that was shared. And I think that people had about him after winning his championship with the Golden State Warriors, that he was potentially like the best player in the NBA. But now he got swept in the first round in the playoffs. So one strong piece of evidence to combat that perceived status of the best player that he had a few years ago. There are many things that are happening in the NBA playoffs, but to me that was a shocking, but also not so shocking because I guess the Celtics are pretty good, but they lost to the Boston Celtics. A very prominent storyline, I think that was that took place in the playoffs last week. And lastly, but definitely not least, there's something I read in the news, specifically in Business Insider, where there's like a mysterious liver disease going around in Europe. And then the time that I read this, which was about 2 days ago, in two states in the U.S. That has affected children. One child has died from this liver disease, and then 17 required liver transplants. Business Insider is reporting that this is of a form of hepatitis that's affecting children. And it's new, mysterious. They don't know what this is exactly. And that's just, I read that, it's just really unfortunate when children are being killed by nature. As bad as COVID is, I thought it was a boon that COVID didn't really affect children as much, but now we have a disease that affects like children, and they're being significantly harmed. Just so unfortunate, the times we live in, especially when you think about the damage nature is incurring on us. And things like, when you think about damage that in nature inflicts on us, I mean, COVID is one, and then environmental damage is one, like global warming, our destruction of the ozone. But that one's the destruction of the ozone and global warming. I didn't read the latest FCC. Is it IFCC or FCC report? Maybe it's arguable that I always feel like whatever I'm going to say is controversial. But I don't know to what extent man-made causes have caused climate change and have warmed our Earth. I imagine it's to a large degree. And I believe it is to a large degree, the last time I discovered or learned about the FCC report, the line that stuck to me was like, there's like a 95% consensus or something. Was that the line? You know what? Let me look that up. 95% consensus. 95% of consensus of expert. That's 97% consensus. What percentage of scientists agree? 97%. This is from when the vast majority of actively publishing climate scientists, 97% agree that humans are causing global warming and climate change. Okay, so there's like 97% consensus. At some time, it could have been 2016, it could be now. This is from NASA. There's no date on this. So maybe this is current. That humans are causing global warming. So going back to the original point, this is a podcast I didn't mean to talk about like climate change, but and its intricacies. But what I wanted to cite in climate change was that's an example of how nature is inflicting damage on us, but that's like a man made like we're not sure entirely, but there's high chance that this was a man-made affliction that we've brought upon ourselves. But for like COVID, and even COVID maybe to an extent, it was exacerbated, especially about our poor decisions in locking down, understanding the disease. We don't know the causes, but maybe there was something that a person did that could have curbed the disease, if we assume that one of the conjectures for how COVID emerged was eating an animal that perhaps had COVID, if that person didn't eat COVID, and then when they felt sick, they isolated themselves and, they would have curbed the disease. Like to an extent, maybe there were some man-made non-decisions that exacerbated COVID. But something like this that I read, where there's a mysterious liver disease going around, same things apply. There are some things that we could do to curb the disease. But like COVID and this disease, these weren't like the origin of this weren't like man-made afflictions. It was nature hosting this virus and this disease, creating this cell or the collection of cells or this organism that then inflicts, that we may perpetuate or not. And what we do will exacerbate the situation, but the origin was something concocted by nature. Whereas climate change, there's a lot that we contributed to. We produce carbon emissions, and then that destroys our ozone, and then that contributes to global warming. So that, I think, difference between a man-made affliction and a non-man-made affliction that nature concocts makes one attribute something as more cruel, that nature can be cruel. Climate change, it's like the reaction I have isn't like nature is cruel. No, it's more like we fucked up as human beings, and we will have to address this. It's not characterized by cruelty, but when you see what, yeah, it's, I guess it comes down to the nature of the origin. But when, yeah, the origin is something external to us, something that afflicts us from beyond our actions, then like a gut reaction I have is like how cruel that is. It's like, so how like detachedly cruel. It's like not like nature has feelings, but the actions it inflicts on us is cruel sometimes. And there are great things about nature, of course, as well too. You know, if it weren't for Earth, which is nature, I might not be alive. Billions of people would not have been alive for this planet that we can inhabit. But in other ways, nature can be very cruel. And this report from the Business Insider with this mysterious liver disease going around affecting children, where one child was killed and 17 required liver transplants. It can be cruel sometimes. All right, well, that's a negative note that I ended on. But to end this on a positive note, I guess, you know, practice kindness in these difficult times. If you have self-doubt, I'm not an expert, but what helps me is like saying these things to myself and consciously reminding myself of imagery, moments, things that are positive in nature, and generally things that like are of the same nature as a negative self-talk, but are positive types of instances. For example, if it's like, you know, I failed in this, and because of this, because I failed in this, in this project or this task, I'm not good enough, maybe. Like, it's a huge failure that I did. Then I remind myself of that I'm capable of doing well in this project, that I've done well in a project like this before, or something like I draw in memory too, just to balance it out. Anyway, that's something that I use. Again, not an expert, so use at your discretion. I'll end this podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed, don't forget to subscribe. And following me on Instagram, HD_TCK. And thanks for listening. See you next time.